This is the CineSnob Podcast.
Hi, welcome to episode 290 of the CineSnob Podcast. I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
Cody, we're like 3.5 hours out from the total solar eclipse that came over our parts of Texas. Did you get to go out and take a look at it?
It was totally cloudy, so I couldn't see anything. It did get really dark, though, for a couple minutes, which was cool.
Yeah, that was weird and spooky.
Yeah, it was weird, but no, it was basically completely obstructed by the clouds for me.
That
so
sucks.
I didn't get to see it.
It was very thin clouds here for me, so I got to see it. It was actually a really cool experience. I'd seen a couple of eclipses in the recent past. There was one in San Antonio back in October, the annular eclipse, which was more of like a ring of fire thing.
Yeah.
Then there was one in 2017, but this was the one that was the big deal, and it was a huge thing that it was cloudy today. And
yeah,
lots of my San Antonio friends were disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe. I mean, there's certainly people who traveled from all across the country and world to be in these areas, and I can't imagine how much of a letdown that must have been to not be able to have seen anything.
It reminds me of those guys that were traveling to see Oppenheimer in 70mm last year, going to San Antonio, and it was the projector crapped out because no one uses it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was. I went out to watch it. It was really cool. There's an elementary school a few blocks away, and I could hear the kids there going ape shit.
Yeah.
For the eclipse. So.
I know a lot of people had like fireworks shows very briefly.
I saw that on our pal Kiko's Facebook page. Yeah. I didn't see any fireworks, but it got certainly way darker than I expected.
Oh yeah, it was super dark. It was it set off all of the lights in my apartment complex that were like automatic with the darkness. And then it just like started getting bright again.
Yeah, you could tell why in pre-science times people would freak the fuck out because. Mm-hmm. That's some scary shit.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we kind of on a rush today, so that's enough of our small talk. Let's go ahead and get started on reviews.
Here are this week's reviews.
First up, we have Monkey Man.
Want to make some money? Got it, Dean.
One.
Come to this place tonight. Bet on Khan. We'll make a killing.
How the fuck do you know?
I'll be fighting him. The monkey will win the first two rounds and go down in the third.
What's in it for you?
I want a promotion.
This is an action movie directed by and starring Dev Patel, probably best known for Slumdog Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a few others. What was the movie? Lion.
Yes.
Did that get nominated? I can't remember if that was nominated for an Oscar or not. But that movie, other stuff that I don't really care for, like Chappie. This premiered at South by Southwest, I believe. You didn't see it there, though, did you, Cody?
I did not, no.
Oh. Well, tell us about Monkey Man and what you thought of it anyway.
Yeah, so, like you said, it is the directorial debut of Dev Patel. Interestingly, if you've been following the marketing, kind of feels like a little bit of like a John Wick-esque, at least from the marketing, sort of like, revenge type movie. Centering around, I don't think he's ever named, right? I think he's just, known as Kid.
He goes, he calls himself Bobby at one point, but it's clearly like,
it's a fake reference. It's like a George Glass situation, right?
From the Brady Bunch. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where he sees a cleaning product that says Bobby on it. And anyway, so,
I would say more Usual Suspects, but you haven't seen that movie either.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No spoilers. Anyway, so basically, When he is a child, basically like a spiritual guru, has a police chief come and basically force the villagers that live there out and taking their land, and they are massacred, and essentially he is able to, you know, escape the massacre and decides that he is going to one day kind of exact revenge on, you know, the police chief, the religious guru, and the entire structure of sort of the things that put them in place. So it is sort of like a revenge movie in that sense. And I think for me, the thing that it is not is John Wick-esque. And I'm not going to hold that against the movie because, you know, I think, you know, expectations and reality and having it not meet is not the problem of the movie. But I do think that it does not, for me, it's not super successful at the things that it's trying to do. And I think that it sort of feels to me like a first film where I feel like there's a lot of ideas and there's a lot of sort of like technique that's trying to be shown off here. And I don't know if it always happens to positive results. You know, I think that there are moments in the beginning of the end of the movie where there are good, entertaining action sequences, but man, they are sort of really kind of spread out. And I feel like the main problem in this movie lies in the structure of it, which I found to be like, I found this movie to be really boring at parts. And I think there's a stretch towards like the middle of the movie where there's like no action sequences. There's kind of like a training montage thing that happens. And I feel like that whole middle stretch of the movie is just like really like not entertaining at all for me. And it doesn't really work for me. And I don't really think it pushes the story or the movie forward. And that comes in like, it's also, it's like construction of like how it doles out its characters where, you know, you're introduced to like this female villain early on who you think is going to be like a major player in the movie and ultimately like doesn't really end up being anything. You also have this like secondary storyline where there's like clearly women being like sex trafficked as part mm-hmm. of this sort of like operation that's going on that he's trying to infiltrate. Like you see him there, he's trying to get a promotion, so he's trying to work his way up to get closer to this like villain woman. And clearly there's like some sex trafficking thing going on. And like that story like goes absolutely nowhere. And then in the middle of the movie, it sort of pivots to where we're introduced to these like transgender warrior characters who are essentially, they said that they were like warriors in their village. Right. And then.
They're basically like a commune. Mm-hmm. Of I don't know the you know, religious implications behind it. I don't know. I mean, it's a Hindu thing, I believe, that I'm not familiar with clearly.
Yeah, and in any way, like the sort of like representation piece of that, like awesome, like the display of it, great, but also thrown in halfway into the movie that where it like starts to become something totally different, and I think. The thing that doesn't quite connect is that like you're supposed to have this sense that this character is at some point like three quarters into the movie or whatever or going into the third act like fighting for causes bigger than himself because now he's like representing like the that community and tribe that like brought him back to health and trained him, and it never really feels like that to me. Even though those warriors like factor into some of the climax, it just feels like this like revenge story that he's just sort of like revenging against, the people who killed his mother. And so that story just like, again, like doesn't connect. And maybe I should know more about the politics in India to get this element where it's clearly like a pushback into like also like modern, the political climate there. But I don't know enough to know whether or not that piece of it really connects. I just know that what we're presented with within the storyline feels really scattered and it doesn't always like connect and make sense. And then the other piece, like I said, from a technical standpoint, you know, there's a lot of like there's a lot of camera movement here. Like every shot, it feels like the camera is always moving. There's a lot of like drone shots that kind of come down and swing around and you know, for me, again, just like too much like technical flair where I just don't think that a lot of those directorial choices really service anything aside from just being kind of showy and not giving a sense of like time and space at times with like the concern with that stuff. So yeah, for me, it just wasn't very effective. Like I said, there are a couple of like action sequences that are kind of cool, but you know, in the stuff that's like in the meat of the sandwich, I think is like not really engaging for me at all.
Yeah. You know, I think John Wick is the most apt comparison, at least for like a Western audience. That said, I don't think it lives up to the highs of that series whatsoever. You know, I think there is some cool filmmaking in here, and I think Dev Patel has a definite future should he want to continue to direct. And this was notably produced by or purchased by Jordan Peele's production company.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a Netflix release.
Right. And this was, this is something that I think was best seen on the big screen. I just don't know that it all connects. And like you mentioned, there's some elements introduced that don't really go anywhere. There's a valet drug dealer character that figures prominently in like the first and second act, who just sort of disappears. Mm-hmm. There's like you mentioned, the sex trafficking angle. There's a character that appears related to that kind of doesn't get anything to do until like this one climactic scene. There seems to be like a two-tiered villain thing that's happening that doesn't really get finalized until the last act.
Yeah.
You know, there's some cool elements. I do like the idea of, and this is borrowed from a lot of stuff like The Raid and even I think John Wick 3, where you're kind of like fighting to the top of a building. Mm-hmm. I think Dredd was like that also. So it's clearly wearing its influences. I think John Wick is probably the biggest one, especially since it flat out mentions John Wick in the movie. You know, that said, I do think it's, you know, it's too long.
Yeah.
There's, you know, that spot in the middle where it gets kind of saggy, and in the training montage, it turns into, I think it kind of undercuts the movie that it started to be. Because you get the sense at the beginning of this movie that this guy has been training his whole life for this moment.
Yeah.
And then you know, the character ends up not being effective enough and then has to train again, which I don't quite understand plot-wise how that shakes out. I mean, obviously, to get the, to get the community on board, that whatever the transgender little commune, forgive me, I don't remember what they were called, but... that said, there's a lot of, probably more progressive stuff than most people are used to hearing about India and seeing about India. But I do think it's a good effort. I don't think it's a great effort. I don't think that there's anything really that stands out in here other than the potential promise that Dev Patel shows here.
Yeah. But it feels like the elements that are here just like don't create or make up anything. Like even having this guy be like a fighter or whatever, again, just like doesn't really make an impact on the movie or the story itself, aside from just like him basically like hustling and working deals based on like either taking a dive or, you know, whatever in a fight. And we also don't know how he got there or got to that point, which also brings into the sort of like Charlton Copley being kind of wedged in here as a character that, again, like doesn't really have anything to do.
Well, I mean, it just
colors the world. It peppers the world, but it doesn't like give us any character insight.
Right. But, and that can be well done because I think John Wick does that. Like that's any of the lore in John Wick. Like no one explains it. Doesn't make any fucking sense like outside of that world. And I think that's fine if it utilizes it well. I don't think this does. It's like I said, it's clearly influenced by John Wick. I think there's a lot of the stuff that's like meant to really look badass, like the monkey mask itself, that gets kind of abandoned at a certain point. Like there's this big like setup for it, and it gets kind of just tossed aside casually. forgive me if you can hear that banging. Okay. There's my cat has a toy fish that flops and it's really loud behind me. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's really meant to be badass, and I don't think it quite pulls that off all the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I think it's a really good first effort from Dev Patel. I'd like to see what else he can pull off. This one right now is kind of feels like a Training Wheels movie. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think it takes too many chances. I think it plays within that formula well enough that it, you know, you can kind of color around the gaps, but you know, if he can keep this up and kind of charge forward in that same path that, you know, Jordan Peele did, I think maybe we'll see something really special from him. I don't think this is near that yet.
Yeah. I think there's work to be done.
Yeah. What's your grade for Monkey Man, Cody?
Yeah, so you might find this surprising. I'm giving it a C. I for me, like, no part of it works for me. And I can't go any higher than that for a movie that ultimately has like a couple of good action sequences in it, but like has so many issues throughout, like especially just again in its storytelling. Like, there are way too many characters that get brought up and have nothing to do for this to like feel cohesive, and I think that lack of cohesion shows through the entire movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a B minus. I think it's enjoyable enough. Again, there's massive potential here, I think, for Dev Patel, and I think that you know, with a little more polish, and maybe, you know, maybe it was the circumstances of this movie. I believe it was shot during 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I believe. Maybe I misread that, but
well, yes,
it was postponed. Sorry, it was. So there, you know, and this was again purchased by Netflix, who was going to just kind of dump it. And then given a theatrical release by Jordan Peele's production company. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a kind of a kicked around piece, but, you know, I think it's, again, I do think there's potential there. I don't think it's quite all the way shown here yet, but
mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens. Okay, moving on to our next movie, Girl's State. Girl's State.
There's something in the air, and it's politics.
Girl State is like high school teenage girls who care about government.
Are you friends?
No, no. We'll become friends.
Yeah, obviously.
In 2040, I intend to run for president.
So I think at Girl State, I'm going to run for governor.
Attorney general.
Supreme Court justice.
What's this?
Okay.
We're never going to get the opportunity to talk to people from different parts of Missouri the way that we are right now.
I am a very social person. I will talk to a wall.
Often when women start talking politics, we get shut down.
But I am not one to be left in the dust.
We all have, in our own different ways, grown up in a world where we've never seen a female president. But how do we change that? We step up.
This is where it all begins.
This is, I guess, a spiritual sequel to Boys State that premiered on Apple TV. I wouldn't call
companion
it a direct
piece.
Sequel. Companion piece. It is from the same filmmakers, though, correct?
Yeah. I think so.
I believe so. Boys State, of course, was a documentary that came out in, 2020?
Yes, that's right.
So yeah, 2020, which I believe our year end, that was past co-host Jocelyn Duran's favorite movie of the year.
Yeah.
I believe I liked it, but I was terribly frightened by those boys. That was, of course, Texas Boys State. This is Missouri Girls State.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Cody, tell us about Girls State and what you thought of it.
Yeah, I think we had similar reactions to it where, like, you know, I think that the most it was sort of an alarming thing to see some of those guys sort of participate in that way, and like the sort of popularity contest of it all and kind of have nothing of substance going on behind the curtain. And yes, so this is a look at the girls' side of the program, where the girls kind of have a similar program where they, again, for anyone who doesn't know, they sort of, it's like high school students who go and essentially form their own government. So there's two different political parties. They formulate, I think, don't they formulate like a constitution? They create a government. They run for office. They go through like a mock Supreme Court case.
Yeah.
And just kind of get to know the ins and outs of government. And for some people, they're super interested in politics. And for some people, maybe not so much. But they're there kind of to kind of learn more and to be surrounded by, you know, other girls their age. And so anyway, this kind of takes an approach of like, you know, where Boy State, I think, had like this alarmist tone to it. This, I think, has a little bit more of a tone of encouragement in the future. And I think, you know, from a documentary standpoint, you know, I think that there are moments, focused moments of this documentary that are really good. I think that the one thing that it has a problem with is I think it's maybe a little bit too sprawling, and I think it's got too many like characters or people that they focus on, and I kind of wish it was a little bit more honed in on like specific stories, because I think that there's like pieces of this that I think are really good. Now, the big thing to know about this that contextualizes is that this Girls State took place the week that the Roe v. Wade ruling was being overturned by the Supreme Court. So like when they arrived to the Girls State, the leaked opinion came out from the Supreme Court. So that is the most fascinating element of this story, where like we're seeing like the group of people that this ruling presumably affects the most get to discuss and talk about how they feel about it, how it affects them, as opposed to hearing, you know, either boys or old white men discuss, you know, this thing. You're hearing it from, you know, these young women who are trying to grapple with the sort of implications of it. And you've got people from, you know, girls who are a little bit more conservative, girls that are a little bit more liberal, you know, kind of talking through it. And in fact, you know, the Supreme Court case that the mock case that they discuss is privacy as it pertains to seeking like mandatory counseling during the abortion process. So again, I think that the best parts of this movie are like, number one, that part, the exploration that these girls have between like talking about an issue that like very much means a lot to, and it's very relevant for them, and hearing the discussion from the people that it affects the most, right? And hearing discourse between that. I think where it is a little bit less successful is kind of the thing that kind of plagues Boy State, which is the amount of time and energy that is put into the election piece of it, where it just sort of is this ultimately a popularity contest or who can give the most rousing speech, that I think kind of undercuts and takes away from the actual like political elements of this exercise that I think becomes so important. Now, you know, you could make an argument that that's the point, maybe, of like showing how much of elections are like popularity contests. And I do think that was the point of Boy State. I do think it serves as like an undercutting element of Girl State. The other thing that I think is really interesting is something that's like, there's only like 5 minutes spent on, and I wish there was more time on it, which is one of the main subjects of the film is a girl who is like almost like embarrassed about being conservative as she's going through like meeting people and
the girl who was running for governor.
Yeah.
Emily.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it ended up like she's really into journalism. And so I think the most like interesting element of this is like in the last few minutes, you know, she doesn't win, spoiler alert, she doesn't win the governor, but like she turns and starts to write a story about something that all of the girls are talking about throughout the whole movie, which is the inequality between the Boy State and the Girl State program. And so she starts to do a little bit of investigative journalism, talking to people about how much money is put into the programs and the inequalities. It's a big topic of conversation, how the boys don't have any dress code and the girls do, and the boys are allowed to walk freely and the girls always have to have a buddy with them. And I think seeing her like find purpose in that and like go into the journalism mode and then like and become like empowered by that piece of it, I think is great. And I wish there was more than just like 5 or 10 minutes spent on it, because mm-hmm. I think that's so much more of an interesting thing than just like watching her try to run for governor here. So I do wish that there was a little bit more focus and balance and editing on the things that were more interesting. But for me, I did enjoy this more than Boy State. I think that it's a better experience. I think that it is actually diving into the political implications of it, as opposed to just sort of like what I feel like was more of like an election type thing in Boy State. So I did find myself enjoying this one more.
Yeah. You know, I said it before at the top of this, that Boy State kind of terrified me. You know, these are kids in Texas that like would take unironic photos with like Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton, right? So they're like red-pilled conservative teen boys.
Yeah.
Which is sort of a phenomenon now, like, you know, these outcast, I don't know. I don't want to get into it, but
yeah.
The idea that you're looking, that we're taking a dive into this Girl State thing at the moment that something so pivotal is happening for women and teenage girls at the same time, you know, the Roe v. Wade overturning, it kind of colors it in a way different way than I assume they were expecting.
Yeah.
And it really points to the idea that, you know, that the dress code, the idea that they have to have a buddy to go anywhere, mm-hmm. just the overall like terror, I guess, that women face on a day-to-day basis is kind of laid bare, this whole thing, for these girls. And I think that you don't get anybody, like, again, it baffles me that somebody could be, you know, like, how do you like, there's nobody that's going to be like this super conservative girl based on this, at least in this storyline, based on what's happening to them. Like, they're actually questioning the system that's in place that's keeping them down.
Yeah.
And sadly, it continues on and on and on. You know, the idea that this one girl was a conservative Christian, you know, it doesn't really paint her as a, you know, a villain or anything.
No.
Like, she's just a church going girl who, from somewhat rural Missouri. There's another girl who's from rural Missouri that is clearly trying to fight out of that.
Yeah.
She's on the Supreme Court. Brooke, I believe, is her name. Mm-hmm. Her story and the Nisha, the girls who become friends, their story kind of gets truncated a little bit.
Yeah. Which I think is a good, I think part of that story is really good too.
Yeah. So it is interesting to see these girls who would ostensibly be like, as adult women, be kind of for all this stuff, I assume, just mm-hmm. based on, you know, kind of the anecdotal evidence I've seen, push back against it, you know, because they're being told like, you can't wear this low cut top. If you do, you have to put on a whatever, something to cover your back. They're on the campus of a university at the same time as Boys State, so they have to walk with a buddy. Like, that's
and the boys are like shirtless and stuff, or allowed to be shirtless or something like that, and they talk about that. Yeah.
And then the you know, the money there, you know, it's like a 3-to-1 mm-hmm. Money ratio, at least according to the figures they give in the movie, like $600K to $200K mm-hmm. Spent on the thing. And they have like the Boys State governor gets sworn in by the governor of Missouri, and the Girls State governor gets nothing.
Yeah.
So it is a kind of a fascinating take it on like what it means to be like a politically active young woman,
mm-hmm.
Where so much of the system is stacked against you. But there's still so many people willing to play along with it, at least when it gets to higher levels of government. I don't know. I mean, I don't. How do you turn into a conservative woman? I don't know. It's a good question. Like, especially if you're interested in politics as a teenager, like, how do you, in this day and age, especially with the stuff like Roe versus Wade being overturned, like, how do you turn into a conservative woman? I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. And this movie doesn't really either.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fascinating that the girl who is the you know, conservative Christian gubernatorial candidate who then turns to journalism,
mm-hmm.
and not like shitty Fox News journalism, like real investigative stuff.
Yeah.
And then kind of gets a little hamstrung by it.
Yeah.
With her, like the headline of the article.
Yeah. And then also, like, by the end of it, you know, you could tell that she's like, her experience has changed, because, you know, she's coming into it being like, I'm running for president in 2040. And then by the end of it, she's like, even if I don't run for president, like she was dead set on it earlier. And by the end of this experience, she's like, I don't know.
Yeah. And then she was worried about, she was going for a scholarship because her mm-hmm. father was a pastor who died in a car crash, and it was just her and her mother. But she's worried if she writes this article that'll ruin her chances for the scholarship. It's fascinating stuff, really fascinating stuff, and much less of a like, oh shit, than the Boys State thing. So I do agree that I liked it better. I do wish, like you said, there was way more time spent on the journalism thing.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, with the election stuff, you get like the what is ultimately like the climax of the movie, which is one of the girls running gives like this super rousing, you know, campaign speech. But again, like, that was a campaign for feminism, as opposed to just like a campaign speech regarding, you know, like policies and outlining that kind of thing. So it does become more about like that speech is clearly the thing that like gets her elected for something like that. So that's the kind of stuff where I appreciate the importance of that, but also it, like, I think it almost necessitates making a big chunk of the movie about the election process, which again, to me, is the least interesting part of what's going on here.
I guess it's really, really meant to be a companion piece to Boys State. I don't know that I'm curious how it holds up on its own.
Yeah.
Cause you know, I don't have that knowledge, but in a vacuum, like, is this something that makes sense if you compare it, if you don't have the ability to compare it to Boys State?
Yeah.
But I do think it's a little more of a hopeful film than Boys State was. Boys State, again, was
terrifying.
Yeah. What's your grade for Girl State, Cody?
So I'm giving Girl State a B, a solid B. I think that, like I said, there's some narrative and editorial choices here that I feel like if this was a little bit more focused and rounded out, and it spent a little bit more time on, I think, like, it spends plenty of time with Emily, but also the most interesting thing about Emily is like 5 minutes of the end of the movie, right? And so I really wish that they would have focused on that a little bit more. I really wish that they would have dove into like further conversations about like the implications of overturning Roe v. Wade. It is like somewhat surface level, but it is, you know, interesting to hear. So I feel like with a little bit more focus and different editing, it could have been better, but for now, a solid B.
Yeah. B for me too. I think all those things you said as well. I echo that. I mean, I wish there was more time spent again on the journalism and again on the idea of, I guess, kind of, Emily, kind of that character, not character, but that real young woman wrestling with herself, like, as to what this means. So
yeah.
Anyway, you can watch that now on Apple TV Plus. That's gonna do it for this week. Next week, Civil War, right, Cody?
Yeah, we've got Civil War, the new Alex Garland movie that I will be seeing in a little over an hour. And then also we have Arcadian, a new Nick Cage creature feature that's coming out through IFC this week. So
okay, I'm really looking forward to Civil War. I'm not going to get a chance to go to the screening tonight, but it's one of those movies that once I heard about it, I'm really on board with it.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that it's going to be good. I'm seeing it in IMAX, so we'll see if that makes any difference. But yeah.
Oh, are you seeing it at the River Center?
No.
Oh.
So LIMAX.
Oh well, would you rather go downtown?
No.
Okay.
I would.
All right. All right. If you want to reach us, you can email us at podcast@cinesnob.net. Find us on Twitter @cinesnob, Facebook, cinesnobnet, youtube.com/cinesnob. Anything else before we go, Cody?
No, I don't think so. I think that covers it.
All right. On that note, I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
Thank you for listening to the Cine Snob podcast. To read reviews, interviews, and more, visit cinesnob.net. See you next week.